I guess we are ready to do the last talk of the day before the drinks come around or something. It's quite fun to be here again. I was in Berlin yesterday and I got here this morning. I didn't expect it to be snow. You also realize that there's a Swedish conference when there's some snooze under the table at the presenter table and you're like, what? So today I want to talk about a subject that is quite bizarre at the moment to me because JavaScript has been a part of my life as a developer for a long, long time. And lately it has become something that drives almost everything in our market on the front end in the web. And there's a lot of discussions about it, and there's a lot of arguments about it, and there's a lot more dogma about it, and that annoys me. And I wanted to show you that JavaScript isn't evil, and JavaScript isn't the solution for everything, but we need to own JavaScript and the idea about JavaScript to build something really good for the web. So I'm Chris Heilmann, I'm Code Poet on Twitter, so if you have some feedback and you need pictures of hedgehogs and kittens and JavaScript advice, that's where I'm on Code Poet on Twitter. And I've been doing JavaScript for a long, long time, and 10 years ago, I got legit. Because you know what we do as developers, we get something, a job to do, and we started writing in a language, and we're understanding the language, and we don't. We just got along with it. We copy and paste from Stack Overflow, and we hope everything works. We change some numbers around. When nothing breaks, we're like, great, let's submit that thing, and we're going there. So for about 5-6 years, I've used JavaScript professionally in large corporations, on large websites, and then I started writing a book because somebody asked me to write a book, and I wrote it for my parents because they don't know what I'm doing, they don't know what computers are, but if you give them a book, they stop pestering you. They stop asking you stupid questions, so you give them a book and you're great. And then when you start writing a book, you cannot fake anymore. You have to understand the thing that you're doing, because otherwise it's a very, very boring book when you're like, I hope this is that. And this is the second edition, which I had nothing to do with, sadly enough. But word of advice, if you want to learn something, start teaching it. Because you cannot fake it anymore. You basically have to understand the thing. If you want to become filthy rich, don't write IT books, because it doesn't work that way. But it's good for you to learn the stuff that you're dealing with. Now, I want to go back a bit in time and talk about something that is why the web is kind of adverse to JavaScript, and the hardcore people of the old web don't see JavaScript as something that you should rely on and you should be using, whereas like new developers who never had the problem like them don't see it. We all know this character, right? If you know the taller one that's green, then you probably have an older sibling because you were always the one not allowed to play the first one. But why does Mario look that way? And why is he a plumber? That makes no sense whatsoever. And every single pixel in this one had to make sense because the hardware was so limited, they had to find an animation of a little sprite character that stands out and means something. So the red and blue, not only were the palette of these computers back then fixed, the red and blue were chosen because they were the best contrast to the background. So you can see where the character is, because there's nothing more annoying than when you play something and the character is gone all of a sudden. The only other green that is in there, for example, is the trees. And if you look at the game, the original Mario Brothers, they switched the trees around and made the clouds. So they reused sprites in that one as well. It's amazing how much they cheated. Also, they're the Mario Brothers, and they're called Mario Mario and Luigi Mario. That's kind of weird as well. They also put a cap on him because there was no need to worry about the hairstyle, the eyebrows, and the forehead. The other problem was when you fall into a hole, they wanted to make a hair flowing, and in 3 pixels, there's just no way to make it flow. It just looked like a razor. So they put a cap on him and said, like, okay, what has an overall and a cap? It's probably a plumber. Great, we wanted to do pipes in the game anyways. We now have everything to make this game. And the large nose and the mustache made it possible to avoid a mouth or facial expression. So we didn't have space for that, so we put a mustache on him to hide him behind that. And it was designed by limitations, and I've done that on other computers as well, and I loved it. I love to be creative within limitations because it means you have to find tricks. That's why old science fiction is so cool as well, because they didn't have CGI. They just had to do random things. The transporter in Star Trek was invented because the spacecraft that was supposed to be on the planet wasn't ready for the pilot movie. So they had to find one way of getting the crew down to the planet, so they came up with a transporter instead of building something. It was gold flitter in sugar water. They put that in there and then overlaid it. And this kind of creativity I absolutely love. Now, on the web, we always had design by lack of definition, because you cannot control what the end user has to read things on the web. You cannot tell them to download a certain browser because you like it. You cannot tell them to buy a new phone because your website is so cool. It's the web is defined independent of ability, independent of environment, and independent of end user agent. So it's not your job to tell people what to use. That's why the technologies that drove the web had to be very forgiving and very flexible. HTML and CSS are flexible and forgiving by being fault tolerant. So if something goes wrong in HTML, the browser fixes it for you. If you don't close your p tag, it closes the p tag for you. If you put a span inside if you put a div inside a span, it shows the div after the span because the span is an inline element and cannot contain other elements that are block level elements. CSS the same way. A CSS line not understandable by the browser. Browser goes, meh, whatever, you know. I just go to the next one. Maybe this time you tell me something I understand. JavaScript, on the other hand, is knives, bees, and foot guns. Because everything that is in JavaScript goes wrong means it's the end of the world for the browser, and it turns your back on you and says, like, no, I'm not playing with you anymore. Done. And back in the days when we had only browsers that were very limited and we didn't have developer tools, you didn't even have debugging. My favorite error in Internet Explorer was always undefined is not defined, which is almost like the browser being philosophical with me, and then it didn't answer when I asked him more philosophical questions. So JavaScript, anything that can go wrong will take down your whole application. And so many things can go wrong. The script could not be loaded. The browser is outdated and doesn't understand the JavaScript features that you're using without you testing for them. Your mobile phone provider could try to save your data by minifying your JavaScript, and your JavaScript wasn't written the way that it could be minified. People could have JavaScript blockers. People could have ad blockers. People could use a proxy browser that removes all script that takes longer than 1.55 seconds to execute or is more than 64K big. So all these limitations are outside of your control. So you have to write the most paranoid code to be a JavaScript developer. The other side of that equation is, of course, when people say, oh, HTML and CSS is so much better because it does everything for us. It does it magically for us. We have no control over how the browser fixed it, what was skipped and what wasn't skipped. So we don't know which browser was in use. So we always like, oh, we rely on the thing to do it magically for us. With JavaScript now, you have means to test what you're trying to do. It's called an if statement. If this browser thing is supported, then apply it. If it's not supported, it will never get applied, so there's no error. Much like jumping in a river before testing that it's deep enough is a good idea as well. And check for crocodiles, too. That's another good idea. Predicting things is tough. If we were to be able to predict things, we could actually play the lottery and we didn't have to write any JavaScript. That's why in JavaScript and the development world, the web development world, we always talk about progressive enhancement. And I've been talking about that for years and years, and I love the concept. It's doing this if statement thing every step on the way. So you say, okay, I write a form that gets submitted if I click a submit button, and that's fine. That works every time. Then if JavaScript is available, I override the submit form and do something cool, Ajaxy, loady, and whatever in the background. But when JavaScript fails, the button becomes clickable and just reloads the page again. The best example of that is escalators. Escalators cannot break. They just become stairs. Sorry for the convenience, you know? You can still go to the other floor, but you have to put effort in. But it's not a broken interface, it's not a lift, where when you stand in that one, you just look around and nothing happens for 2 hours, you realize something went wrong, and you press the button and it doesn't do anything. So the question is, though, is this still something enough? Is a form that reloads the page something what people expect, or have we, as the web development people, not understood that our users have moved on and their form factors have changed? And what does progressive enhancement mean? Does it enhance it everywhere on the step? Does it go to an interface that might not be accessible to the person because they have not a keyboard? I cannot test for a keyboard. I cannot detect a touch. It's impossible to do these kind of interaction things in a browser. So the people against JavaScript basically say JavaScript can't be trusted as it can be turned off. It can be turned off, definitely, but it's much, much harder in browser nowadays to turn it off. And the turning off is, to me, something that the end user did. It's like, you know, when I write an extension that takes off all the JavaScript off the web because there's evil JavaScript out there, I shouldn't be surprised that other things look much more basic as well. Much like turning off the color on a TV set and turning off the sound and then complaining that the movie was bad. on the other side, the people who don't who like JavaScript, or most of them who don't understand JavaScript but just use it, say everybody has JavaScript, everybody has a new browser, everybody has a fast connection, it's totally fine to rely on JavaScript. And all of this is dogma, and I don't like dogma. You should not just say like, oh, it's one way or another. Everything on the web is floating. We did define it as not defined. We did define it as it could be anything out there. So let me tell you a quick story. A few weeks ago, we released the 10K Apart competition. So it was a competition to make 10K something on the web, to build something that's 10K big. And I'm like, cool. I was on a plane, I was bored, I saw all the movies because I travel too much, and I'm okay, I'm going to write a game. This is cool, I'm going to write a game on my browser, I'm offline, developer tools are built in the browser, I've got Visual Studio Code and my editor, and I'm going for it. This is the game that I wrote. CSS has color names, wonderful things like dark golden rod, and these kind of things. You never know if it's a My Little Pony or a color. But I did a list of these colors, and you click on them. It says, like, what is the color so-and-so? You click on them, you got 20 tries, and after 20 tries, it says, like, you lost or you won. It's on GitHub. It's open source. You can play with it. This is what it looks like when you play it. You just say a level, easy, hard, whatever, and then you start clicking it, and it says, like, no, that's the wrong color, or, yeah, that's the right color. If it's the right color, it moves. It gives you random colors. If it's the wrong color, it says just, no, you did the wrong one. It's written on a plane, offline, in roughly 2 hours. It works on desktop and mobile. It's independent of input and responsive because I tested it with my mobile phone connected to the computer as well. It's using Service Worker, so it caches the content locally and can be played offline. Now it's an icon on my desktop. I never have to load that thing again. That's on my mobile phone and on my computer. When I'm bored, I can play it offline. And all in all, it's 8 kilobyte, less than 8 kilobyte, with the biggest part being icons, because every mobile operating system wants different icons, which was super annoying. So, well done, Chris. I patted myself on the back. I did this really, really cool thing on a plane in 2 hours. That is a really cool game and shows what browsers can do nowadays. Then, of course, I did what every well-thinking developer did, and I looked at the source and told people about it. So this is the whole game. This is all of the source code in JavaScript. Bit of HTML, but not much. The structure wasn't hard at all. I have an array of all possible colors. I then get a random cut of n elements, and I display them bit by bit. And I store the name of the color in a data attribute. So when you now, one of the items, I get one of the colors and show them as a name. And I use event delegation on the list to add one click handler. So people in jQuery always assign click handlers to everything. This is expensive. This is slow. This is a bad idea. So all you need to do is have one click handler on the list. And when you click it, it tells me which list item has been clicked. I then compare the data attribute of that list item of the target of the event with the color to match. And if true, I display a new random list. If false, I decrease the possible moves counter. And that's about it. If no more moves are left, the game is over. And then the only problem I had is ArrayRand is not available in JavaScript. It's a PHP function or any other language out there. So I did what every good developer did later on. I copied and pasted something from Stack Overflow and hoped it worked. I found out a few things. Computers and smartphones are powerful. Browsers can do a lot and are open to feedback. So when I found a few bugs in browsers with that game, and I send it to Safari, and I send it to Microsoft. Well, I don't have to. I work for them. I send it to Mozilla, who I used to work for, and a lot of things got fixed. The JavaScript is flexible and has evolved as well. Much easier nowadays to write a JavaScript because you don't have to worry about all the broken browsers any longer. And CSS has become amazing. All these little transitions and animations, all these things I didn't have to do in JavaScript. And developer tools and browsers give us great debugging capabilities. I can actually see how fast that thing performs, when it scrolls, how to make it faster, how many frames per second, and so on and so forth. The beauty of HTML, CSS, and JavaScript is that it's all contained in my browser on my machine. So if my machine is powerful, like my MacBook or my Surface Book or my mobile phone, I can do a lot of stuff on the machine itself. I don't even need to go to the web anymore. And every time you go to the web and you go back, that is slowing things down. And people need to be online and not online all the time. All of it contained is in one package. Everything is running on end-user environments, and you wouldn't need Service Worker for that. Inlining the whole thing is enough to make it available offline, because it's one little game. And then, of course, I did what everybody developer did, thus I started reading the contest guidelines after I wrote my game, much like you write this, you read the specs of the project after you started it. And then it said, like, okay, what do we want from you? We want it completely progressively enhanced. So if JavaScript is not available, it should do something. And what mine does is basically nothing, which is not something, sadly enough. So I'm like, okay, I messed up. I got to do something better than that. And I should try to, and then I thought, like, okay, JavaScript is now server-side and client-side, so let's write a cool Node.js solution, make it universal, gluten-free JavaScript, really cool. And then I thought, I don't have enough time, sort it, I know PHP. Okay, so I wrote a more sturdy structure, but using a PHP API for the colors instead of using everything on the client-side. So I wrote a PHP API with the name colors as the content. I used array rand, because now I got it, to get a cut of that and to pick one to match. I write out a list of buttons because I don't have links that point anywhere now. So I make it buttons so it submits the form every time you click one of the images. If the color matches the button that was clicked, I get a new list. And if the color doesn't match, I decrease the amount of moves and show the list again. And then I realized something. I don't store the random list. Because in the browser, in my JavaScript version, it never changes. It never reloads the page. But this one reloads the page, everything starts from scratch. So I need now to do an interim, store the list somewhere, store the color to match somewhere, and store how many moves there were, and so on and so forth. As I never left the browser did all that for me in JavaScript. So we don't keep any state, so I have to maintain it between reloads. And the amount is not much, but every time there's something going back and from the server, it's not about your code, it's about all the evil code that could get injected by people into your server. And you don't want to run a website for like adult pills or something like that. And it's terrible as how much of a honeypot an open form for spammers is out there right now. So okay, I wrote my PHP and I started filtering out like mad. So I had the list of images and I had the colors and I started intvaling everything to make sure that you cannot put anything but a number in there and so on and so forth. And as in Harry Potter, it says constant vigilance. At the end, I wrote a function called filter out something on all of those before I write it out. Every time you write something out to the document, filter out as much as you can. Allow people to enter things, but don't rewrite it out again, because this is how bad stuff happens. And then without JavaScript, of course, we add some. That's progressive enhancement. It's not fun to reload the page every single time I click on a color. So I load the API content with Ajax, and I go there and do the same thing that I did with the other one. So I repeat the code functionality client-side, but it's also available server-side, so it does something now when JavaScript is not available. This is the code, the more webby version. It's the same amount of JavaScript content. It doesn't work offline unless we also create a different API or we store it in the JavaScript in a local storage or something like that. And it does work with JavaScript disabled. So well done. This was what people wanted of me. And it also allows bad people to inject code unless I'm very vigilant with keeping the backend secure. So by supporting the no JavaScript case, I made myself open to much more attacks than before. How about some heresy? The JavaScript not available argument is largely bogus, and to me, it is holding back the web. This doesn't mean you should blindly rely on JavaScript. The JavaScript is flaky and will break argument is very much alive and will always be the case. It is a language that was defined in 10 days. There was alcohol involved, I'm quite sure. And it has all kind of quirks and strange things, but it is something that does a lot of beautiful things, but we have to own it. We have to make it ourselves. We call this programming. We get paid for that. This is what we should be thinking two steps ahead of what people want of us. This is what our job does. Evolution is happening around us. People are not using desktops anymore. People are not using laptops anymore. Most people are using smartphones as their first means of going onto the web. The new markets that are coming around, Africa, India, Bangladesh, those areas, There is no desktops, there's no laptops. They're first of all far too expensive, and secondly, there's no wire in the ground. So all people have is mobile connectivity, so they will use smartphones to go on the web. So our solution should think about the mobile factor first. The cool thing about that one is that the interface in mobile has to be simpler than on the others. So nobody likes these, like, you know, SharePoint connected drop-down lists. One nice button saying do this, it might be a better option. This means we have totally new error cases that are much more important than JavaScript is not available. Because the JavaScript is not available, as I said, is either a terrible error in the networking, which I can work around with something like Service Worker, or the end user wanting to kill the thing and not being happy with what our choice of technology. So, to show love to the mobile phone, which errors do we need to think about? Small initial payload. The first thing that loads needs to be tiny and do everything that, or at least hint at what's coming next. A 2-second black screen on a mobile phone is the end of the world for most users in user testing. A 2-second pause on a desktop, nobody cares. The form factor supporting content, big buttons, allow people to be outside the buttons a bit by giving it a transparent outline, for example. Form factor supporting interfaces, think touch, don't think keyboard, don't think mouse, don't think pixel perfect. Offline flaky connection support. Offline and online is not a binary state as well. Most of the time you get a wireless that says like, hey, want to connect to me? I'm not giving you internet though. Yeah, I just drain your battery by trying to reload myself continuously all the time. Taking advantage of the power of the end user device. All of these things come with storage space. All of these things come with an interface that allows me to, for example, take a picture. Instead of doing my own camera solution, just say input type image, and the device will get me to the camera, take the picture, and get it back into my JavaScript rather than doing everything myself. And avoid interaction latency. The 300 millisecond delay that happens by clicking and dragging something on a device is what killed us when it came to comparison to native applications. This is all achievable with HTML and CSS, and JavaScript and CSS. It's much harder, if not impossible, without client-side scripting. So JavaScript is part of that mobile world, and we should start embracing it and owning it. Which is annoying, as the HTML5 revolution promised us to go from document to apps. We got all these like input type telephone number, input type color, all these really cool interaction things that promise us really cool ways of putting data into our sites. Sadly enough, that 8 years after the proposal and 5 years after HTML5's last call, the support is still terrible. And it's very, very random at times from browser to browser and from mobile phone to mobile phone. If you want to know more about it, there's a great talk by Monica Dinculescu from Google. And she did the input type, and she gave a 45-minute rant about like how she loves input, but it lets her down because everything is broken. Input type range, for example, should give you a slider, and you cannot resize the slider button on most browsers, so it's impossible to use on a mobile phone, where a slider makes more sense than something I do with my mouse. The Filament Group did a research about input type number. Input type number is cool because on a mobile phone, it doesn't take your normal keyboard, but it gives you the number keyboard to type in a number, which is much, much easier because you don't have to want that one row thing. The only problem is that math, that bastard, means that you can have negative numbers and floating numbers, and most keyboards haven't thought of that. They just give you integer numbers that are positive. So on the top, you got iOS that basically allows you a floating point, but no negative number. In the middle, you've got Android, which gives you no floating point, but negative ones. On the bottom, you got Windows Mobile, which gives you everything but users. And the sad thing is that we cannot change that. We cannot go to Apple and, hey, can you change it from iOS 5 years ago? They're not going to do that. So it's broken, and it's progressively enhanced. It's supposedly doing the right thing, but we cannot do it. So we have to do our own input type number, testing which is supported and doing something else. The other thing is, of course, that the old stuff of HTML, the bad people of the internet, are not stopping abusing that old technology. That came out a month ago, and it blew me away. In user-generated content, you can't have nice things. If you allow comments and you allow people to put links in there, fine, you already have to filter out malware, and some browsers do that already for you and these kind of things. But this is an interesting one. What do we do every time we show a third-party link in our pages? We don't want it to be open in the same tab, because that means people would go away from our web product and go to another one. So we put target blank in there. That's been around since HTML 2.0 or something like that, or 1.0 actually. And it always meant in the older browsers it was a new window, in the newer browsers it's a new tab. Excellent. That content is loaded in the background. People don't worry about it. There's a massive security problem with this, because with window opener, the new page gets full access to the JavaScript DOM of the opening page. So you click the button, you go to another tab, you go over there, you look at the kittens, and that kitten website reloads the page from the other one and says, like, oh, by the way, I'm Facebook, you forgot to log in, can you please log in again, which is a phishing site. And you wouldn't even know because you looked at the kittens, and kittens are gorgeous, so it's much more fun. I like puppies more. But that's how you distract people. So the way to fix this now, the standards bodies have spoken and we found a way solution, you put a rel in there, and the rel has to be no opener for Chrome and Opera, and no referrer for Firefox, because reasons, I don't know. The interesting thing here is that you could fix it for all browsers. So instead of using a target blank in your links, you should overwrite it when you click on them. So you say, okay, window open, window opener, other window opener is null. So that way, that window or that tab cannot read the JavaScript from the first tab any longer, and the other window location is URL. So by redirecting with JavaScript, you fix it for all browsers rather than relying on HTML that will not be fixed in old browsers any longer. Except, on some browser, you have to listen for the click event and prevent the default browser behavior from opening a new tab, then inject a hidden iframe that opens the new tab and immediately remove the iframe, because developers have too much time. I'm not saying which browser it is, but there is a JavaScript library to fix it for you. It's called Blank Shield. So you can, if you do something where people can upload links, put that thing in there. Or make sure that that every link automatically gets a window no open, that the opener thing gets overwritten for every link that you click. Our solutions should have excellent error handling instead of automatic tolerance. The whole, like, oh yeah, blank will always work, fine, and somebody will find some terrible way of abusing this. You might remember links had like different colors for if they were already clicked or if they weren't clicked. People used that to make lists in the background to see which bank sites that you were on, until we stopped in browsers to do that. And our solutions should be great solutions and not just good enough without breaking. And that's what the HTML CSS solution a lot of times does. You expect something amazing and that one comes out of it. Non-defensive coding is a problem. JavaScript error in Safari is preventing all Mathematica formulas in Wikipedia from rendering. And this is inexcusable to a degree. That's like, why is that even a thing? Okay, math is not supported in every browser. That's why Wikipedia probably did it that way. But these are the things that go wrong, and then people blame JavaScript for everything because the developers didn't write defensively. If the JavaScript cannot show the formulas, then show an error message. Tell the user something went wrong. Don't let them just wonder why it's broken. This was the other day I tried to buy something, internal server error, inside the Apple Store, into the iTunes Store, because that's HTML5 as well. That was a bad one. And there's a culture to let's use whatever until it works. And a lot of people did that. We all use jQuery for everything because we didn't want to think about browsers. We all use other people's libraries because we don't want to fix the browser issues. We're standing on the shoulders of people nowadays. A lot of the stuff that we do is not written by us any longer, especially when it comes to server-side JavaScript. NPM modules, like libraries, building other libraries, loading other dependencies. This is how we write huge software, and this is a very good way of doing it as well. We just have to make sure that our dependencies don't make us too dependent and don't break without user tests, for example, or unit tests. There was a great case where NPM had a package called FS. This package is not necessary because Node itself already has FS. So somebody wrote a package that has the name of a native implementation. So they said, like, okay, that's malware, that's stupid. Let's remove that one. So they deleted it. What the package FS did was just in the console wrote out IMFS. That's all it did. And they found hundreds of websites breaking because they stopped using that package, because people relied on it without ever looking at what the thing was doing. They're just like, oh, I need FS, let's use the FS. And of course, if I find something that only says I am something, I checked if there is a package that does something like that. So it's a non-functional package, and it locks the word IMFS and exits. 1,000 packages do depend on it. So it's not only the solutions that depend on it, but other packages stop breaking because they never checked what FS really did. Then I checked if there's a GROOT module, because if something says I am something, and there is one, but it really does something yet sensible. So that was much more fun. And it's not a JavaScript thing. Every language does that over time. That's a friend of mine who had a PHP thing, Laravel. He couldn't update it because failed missing dependencies. We don't fix dependencies. We just rely on them magically. And this gives a whole language a bad reputation. We have a lot of messy solutions, and we keep building more tools to undo what clogs up the web. The amount of like package managers and grunt tasks that we have that undo all the things we put in before, like why do we put them in? Why don't we test while we're building it if they're really necessary? This was a door opener in an office here in Stockholm. I love this. Only an engineer can come up with a solution like that. Instead of just hardwiring the things together in the back, it's just amazing. So best practices can help with that, but only when they apply to the people to build things now and when they solve current issues and needs. We can make fun of these things happening in NPM and in Node, but we should just tell people, okay, this dependency needs to test what the thing is. Why do you even have that package in there without knowing what it does? That sounds dangerous to me. What about all the browsers? What about the abomination that was in the first Android versions, that browser that was a WebKit fork, we don't know what it was. How about Internet Explorer? How about Netscape? What about these extreme environment browsers? These browsers you probably have never seen, but they're used by millions and millions of people every day in China and in Russia. This is like Puffin and UC Browser, and this is the Silk Browser for the Amazon Fire tablet and Opera Mini. These are browsers that take your code and minify it and take everything out, make all your images look crap, so people can download them and see them on their slow connection phones and on their low environment phones with like 16 meg of RAM rather than 256 meg of RAM. These are all valid concerns, but they're edge cases. I don't think we should see them as a punishment scenario. Every time I show something cool, people are like, yeah, but if you look at it in Internet Explorer 6, it's terrible. And then I'm like, show me something that doesn't look terrible in Internet Explorer 6. This is a retired browser, and people who use it are not used to beauty. Don't give them beautiful interfaces. That would just confuse them. What about accessibility? I always loved that when on Twitter people come like, yeah, you did something with JavaScript. You don't like people with disabilities. I used to do accessibility work for years and years. I spoke at Funka here in Stockholm as well. JavaScript is not the enemy of accessibility. It's actually more or less the other way around. Used sensibly, JavaScript is an accessibility benefit, sometimes the only way to make things accessible. We've got area to put, say, like area described by and area labeled by. This works. It tells a screen reader what something is that you made from divs, and it should be really a button. So it says like area labeled by, this is click this to continue, and so on and so forth. Everything else in area, every functionality of it, has to be written in JavaScript by you. HTML does not do that for you. It's just an add-on to HTML. Area was a stopgap solution that never got away, sadly enough. In the game, I did something like this as well. You can always go forward and backward in a grid like that by tabbing. So you just go tab, and it goes forward, shift tab, and you go backward. But what I wanted, if you actually have cursor keys, you can just go up, down, left, and right. So you don't really need to go just through all the lists just to find one and go back there. And a simple way of doing that was just using JavaScript. So without JavaScript, you can still tab through the whole thing. It's annoying. With JavaScript, you got that functionality. It's like 5 lines of JavaScript to do these things nowadays. It is more important for us to get a grip on the overall quality of the web and our code than to support something. That's always the case of using Ahref JavaScript void 0, which is a link that doesn't do anything when JavaScript is not available. Why somebody, as a developer, would write that much code that does nothing is always confusing to me. But I don't think it's not written anymore. It's just copied and pasted, and people don't know what they're doing, and they hate the front end, but they're asked by their product manager to do the front end stuff. So we get all these cruft on the web that should have gone away a long, long time. And this is not a JavaScript's fault. This is the implementation of JavaScript. People not understanding, not being taught properly, or getting answers that they don't need. A lot of times people come to Stack Overflow that have a real problem. Oh, can I do this? And then they get like a lecture by people. No, you shouldn't do this. You should use that package manager and that computer before you even continue because you're not professional. Instead of bashing the bad use of JavaScript, let's embrace and scrutinize new ideas. Functional programming is a big thing that everybody gets excited about, and JavaScript is more or less made for it. It's a very, very good way of dealing with complexity and making things bigger. So instead of saying like JavaScript is terrible and HTML is the only solution, let's embrace that people are using it and give advice for today. There's a very cool thing happening right now, and that's called Service Worker in PWA. Service Worker is a new API, not supported by Edge yet, but we're working on it, not supported by WebKit yet, but they're thinking about it, and supported by all the Blink browsers out there. It is, in essence, an HTTP proxy, a router that you can write in JavaScript. So instead of hoping the browser caches something, I can define a cache. I can delete the cache, I can update the cache, and so on and so forth. It also allows me to do things like notifications. My HTML5 application can sleep and doesn't have to be open in the browser, but I can fire up a notification saying like, hey, there's new stuff, do you want to open this and try it and go with it, or something needs your yes or no, and put the yes or no in there. You don't even need to open the app. You can do it in the background. And there's oodles and oodles of information about progressive web apps. It's a great thing. I can talk about it for days. It's time to rethink our best practice for the web approach. Let's create and publish as much content as independent of JavaScript as you can. If the thing works in HTML, if the thing can be displayed in HTML, do that. That will always work. That cannot fail unless it's an interactive element like the form elements that I showed you. But a paragraph with text around it doesn't have to be done with mustache or template strings or something like that. That could be done on the first load and people will be able to read it. JavaScript can make things much more enjoyable, and some things are just not worthwhile to implement without it. Like my game, I wouldn't have published it as like reloading every time you click that thing. Nobody does that anymore. That's just annoying to play by now. Use JavaScript to benefit from the user's hardware. If the thing has local storage, use that local storage. Tell the user like, hey, by the way, next time you come, this doesn't have to be loaded anymore. I just saved you a lot of data on your SIM card. Spend more time building great interfaces, less time relying on what's there and can't break. In many cases, it's disappointing. Think about the best use case for that and make that work without JavaScript, and then give it the most amazing, most sensible, most form factor fitting interface that you can think of. Benefits of it, if you think, okay, it's okay to rely on JavaScript, it's not the evil thing, then you start freeing yourself, your mind about like, what can I do with this? Don't rely on automatic fixes. JavaScript breaks and is painful. It allows us to analyze what went wrong. You know when something is there. Every tutorial on this planet, every 5-minute live coding keynote thing is like, oh, and this works, and the error case is a to-do. The error case is where we should spend most of our time, because error cases are frustrating and are wrong. This is where your user interface really shines. Tooling is much better, and we get much more insights into what happened in it than, for example, CSS. If something breaks in CSS, all I can do is file a bug about it and hope the browser makers fix it. Or I find some way around it with some other CSS. In JavaScript, it tells me flat out what went wrong. We don't have undefined is not defined anymore. We have proper error messaging now. We take responsibility for the interface. It's our job to make it happen. Not browser makers to agree and find a consensus. If you build the thing with JavaScript, it's up to you to make it work across all the form factors that people will be using it with. It doesn't have to look the same everywhere, it just needs to work everywhere. And this is something you can test, it's something we can also script nowadays. We have headless browsers, you can do all kind of continuous integration testing in JavaScript as well. We have full control over what gets loaded and cached where and rendered when. Relying on browser caching was always a terrible, like, I don't know how many things there. The first iPhone couldn't load more than 64 CSS files. Why one would put 64 CSS files in there, weirdly enough? But the cache was just full and it purged it randomly. It didn't tell you what it deleted. With a service worker, I've got full control over my caching, and I know what is where and what can be deleted and what should stay. Dangers to be aware of. We shouldn't hide functionality in magical abstractions. You always find a polyfill or a library or an NPM module that says, like, okay, if you use me, everything is okay, everything is cool, magical, don't worry about it. Don't trust these things. Understand what you're using in your systems before you use it. Because if it breaks, you're the one who also has to fix it, because you don't want to try to hunt down every person that wrote every module that you did. Just because we can do everything in JavaScript, and we can really do everything in JavaScript, I've seen it on like Raspberry Pis, kittens, dogs, whatever, we don't have to use everything in JavaScript. When HTML is good enough, when CSS is good enough, use it. And don't. If it's broken in HTML, it's probably not going to get fixed anytime soon. But an animation in CSS, for example, will always be optimized by the browser to be smooth. Your own JavaScript animations have to be your responsibility to keep them smooth, and it's not fun because you got 16 milliseconds per frame to put all your computation of your JavaScript in. The browser engine, the CSS engines, have been optimized to do these things for you. While the client is powerful, it's also unknown. A lot can be done on the server, also in JavaScript. That's the cool thing. You don't need to learn PHP anymore like I did, or Perl before that. You can do everything in JavaScript nowadays. The node environment is slightly different to client side, of course, but it's pretty hot right now. It's a pretty good skill to have. Important considerations independent of technology used. Stuff happens. Spend more time in creating sensible error messaging and fallbacks. Spend less time in trying to predict every possible error. You cannot predict errors. Just from time to time, you have to say, okay, here's an error. I don't know what happened. Can you please reload? And it works. Native apps do that. My Android, every single time, like, okay, this breaks and it restarts. It's annoying when you try to get into a plane when it's your ticket app. But that's software. There's gremlins in the machine. Computers hate us. They just don't say it properly. They just throw errors from time to time. Slowness kills. Our solutions must load fast what is needed and actually be very, very responsive when they do it. So they need to be snappy when you interact with them. There's nothing more annoying than a button that doesn't do anything. It doesn't matter if the functionality takes some time or you load something in the background, but give me an immediate feedback that that what I did has an action. Like, I clicked it, the button says, like, okay, wait, I'm on it, I'm fine. If you don't do anything, then people click it like several times and wonder what's going on. I always like that. We're so hardwired like that as humans. When a button doesn't work, we just click it 500 times and that will probably fix it, right? And that way we slow down the computer even more because it tries 500 times in the background what's going on there. Offline and flaky is the norm. Avoid network dependency as much as you can. If you can store something on people's computers, do it. And do that on desktop, and do that on tablets, and do that on mobile phones. Not only on mobile phone. It annoys me how much data I have to load every single time when I go to a page already. It's been already loaded. Why do I have to do that again? Security is paramount. A hacked server sending out malware or spam, as I showed you, if I wouldn't filter out everything that goes in my PHP solution, is worse than an app that needs a restart. I'm actually okay for software failing gracefully and saying, like, oh, something went wrong, I don't know what it is, you can report it here or you can restart and it works out. But my server being my machine working without JavaScript but in the background downloading malware, that's not a good thing to either. We have to stop thinking in binaries and consider writing great, secure, and failure-aware solutions using each technology to its strength. I even was okay with Silverlight. I was okay with Flash. These had their strengths that back then JavaScript and the web didn't have. So use them, but use them sensibly. Don't use them because you want to have them or somebody said they're great. Understand what we're doing. And in JavaScript, that's very, very important because it's easy to do evil things in JavaScript. But that doesn't mean the language is evil. It just means bad people are faster in implementing it than we are. So Mario evolved. It looked different later on. And so can the web, but only if we allow it to and we start embracing new form factors, new problems, and write better solutions. And that's all I had, so thanks very much.